Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Pray for me. Pray for everybody. Pray for all of us, because once again, Jacob deGrom, in an extremely dominant start, has left the game for the Mets with a shoulder injury. He went through three innings tonight, struck out eight in his three innings. He's only the third pitcher since 1901 to begin the first three innings of a game with eight strikeouts. No hits. This could have been it could have been a perfect game. Could have been a 24 strikeout night. And after three innings, he comes out of the game with right shoulder soreness. Now, this is the fourth different part of the body that Jacob deGrom has hurt and injured in the last couple of months.
It's Operation the Wacky Doctor's Game.
It is. Don't touch the sides. There goes his funny bone. He's had an elbow. He's had a forearm. Now he's got a shoulder. He also missed a start with back tightness. So this is the fourth ailment that he has had that has either cut a start short or forced him to miss a start. This is where now, you, if you're the Mets, you go, okay, you know what? I get that the last one with the elbow tightness that he had, everything was fine. He threw, and now at least the elbow's not an issue. So there's the one good news. But this is now where, hey, you know what? It's the middle of June, and clearly, physically, something's not right with the guy. Now, look, he's got a smaller frame. You know, he's not one of those big, you know, the big muscular pitchers. He's got a very slight frame, and he throws really hard, kind of reminds you of Pedro Martinez a little bit. And so now, if you're the Mets, you have to give him one of those full Star Trek body scans and say, you know what, Jake, you're going to hang out until the All-Star game. Okay, we got 2 weeks to go. Everything is okay. We're having it. Everything, knock wood, everything is fine with us. This season's going well, but you need to sit for a while. We need to see what's going on with you, because this is the fourth thing. I mean, and whether it's something that is, they're all independent of each other because of a mechanics issue or something else, this is still the fourth time you've had to leave a start because you're hurt. Something is up, and let's stop and figure it out. Like, is this something that he's doing one thing with his delivery, and when he does that, it affects another part? One part of the delivery affects his elbow. When he adjusts it, it affects his shoulder. He adjusts it, it affects his side tightness. It affects his back. All of these things. Something's got to happen, and I'm okay with the Mets saying, you know what, we're gonna sit you for a while, and as long as everything is okay coming off the shoulder soreness, we'll see you right after the All-Star break, because at this point you have to sit back, and it's not like you're falling out of contention and everything else is good. Look, the knock wood, I don't want to say it because I feel like I'm putting it out there, but the Mets have been in first place for well over a month, and they have an 8-game lead in the loss column in the NL East. So even if you give it away, you're still in contention when he can come back in 2 or 3 weeks. But you got to sit him now, man. Every time he comes to the mound, I hold my breath when he pitches. It's like I know exactly what the Dodger fans have been like for the past years when Clayton Kershaw is out there. Every time he pitches, you hold his breath. Every time Jacob deGrom pitches, I hold my breath. So he's got to sit for a while and get right.
Yeah, you can't listen to him because he's going to want the ball, right? That's what happened after this last scare. Hey, I'm okay. I'm going to battle through. That's great. We know you're a tough guy. Nobody's discounting. It's like all the guys. You got to protect him from himself to a degree. If he keeps wanting the ball, then what are you going to do? It's like we've been talking about with all these NBA players, right? When folks, you couldn't have let Anthony Davis out. Like, he's a grown-ass man. If he wants to go, you got to let him go. You should sit him down and talk to him about it and make sure, you know, you're really doing this, right? You're not getting bullied into that courtroom, Danny. I mean, you're not getting bullied onto that court, Anthony. You know what I mean? Few good men comes into play with some of these guys, right? Going Owen back to the Anthony Davis. And I think for Jacob deGrom, there's a level of I'm seizing the moment where everybody's recognizing that I'm far and away the best in the game. I don't get a lot of run support, and they need me every fifth day. Like, there's a lot of that. You start to feel yourself a little bit. And you think because you've had injuries in the past that you're going to be able to get past them the same way. And that's not necessarily so, right? The thing, think about just in all of you out there, wherever you're listening, we appreciate you. 400-plus affiliates nationwide on SiriusXM, the iHeartRadio app, wherever. Think about the little aches and pains you had 5, 10 years ago. They stay a little longer now, don't they? right? You tweak something trying to play pickup basketball or maybe getting on a treadmill or even just walking down the street with your dog. All of a sudden, like, wow, that didn't feel right. Took a bad step. That bad step lingers. It's the same for professional athletes. Yes, they have miraculous healing powers, not quite that of Wolverine, but yeah, they're in better shape and they recover. But 5 to 7 years into their careers, those linger a little bit. Shoulders and ankles and knees and all that stuff. Head, shoulders, knees and toes. And as much as they may want to force themselves out, let's have the realistic conversation about the big picture. And DeGrom, I know, is going to be keenly aware of all the records he's breaking with every start he goes out, right? So you don't want to mess up any of that either. So the ego is going to come into play. Look, I'm passing Koufax. I'm kept passing this guy. Look at all these legends that I'm dusting in my production. Oh, and I'm hitting well at the plate. What is he up to? 423?
423. Six, yeah. Six RBI, four runs allowed this year. Six RBI, four earned runs.
So it's that you're in between the rock and the hard place, because eventually he may throw one pitch too many to where it's, all right, there's the point of no return, but it's also he's a highly compensated player, and as we know, they've got to trust their body. And if they trust their body to get out there, how do you keep them off the mound? How do you keep them off a court, off the football field? It's just the worst of all scenarios for the Mets. Right, of trying to convince him, we'll be okay if you wait until after the All-Star game comes and goes, or even a week or two later, however much time they can buy.
You know, and maybe this is just who it's going to be for him for his career, because of his slight frame, because of how hard he throws and what he does. I mean, this may just be what it is. It's going to be like this, because all the different things that have happened so far, he only has missed a start, right? Side tightness, missed a start, he's fine. No, elbow, right. Always missed a start. Back tightness, he missed a start. This shoulder soreness, who knows, maybe he misses a start, but maybe this is just how it's going to be, and he's going to be someone that once you get to 80 pitches, that's going to be it. He's got to come out of the game, and it's got to be managed. I mean, if that's the way it's got to be, then that's the way it's got to be. So I'm fully on board with it as long as he does get to pitch. But clearly, I mean, that may be what his career has forward for him now. How many innings can he throw? How many pitches can you give him in a game? I mean, this is a lot. I mean, look, it's a lot in just 1 month for a guy to have four different things like this. So, I mean it. I'm going to do this, I think, probably for the rest of his career. Yeah, Every time he pitches, is he okay? Was he good?
Go light another candle, good. Buddy.
Good.
Get that shrine up.
He's okay. Everything is okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
But what the Hawks are, it's not just Trae Young with 37. When you have other guys with 15, 18 points, yep. Like Lou Williams has 15. Gallinari's got 16 with that huge hoop. Collins has 19. You have options now. It's not just, hey, one guy at the end. It's why that possession by the Hawks just a couple of seconds ago when Gallinari hit that fadeaway jumper, it's okay. Yeah, in certain situations, you want that shot to be Trae Young, but it's not like other guys can't make shots. These guys have made shots all through their careers. I like this. You have the offense for the Hawks is just humming right now, and it's been humming for the past few minutes, and the Sixers clearly they ran out of gas. They ran out of ways to be able to get creative on offense, and now they're going to wind up losing this game when they led this thing by over 20 for a long length of time, and they went to the fourth quarter and their lead was 14 and 16 points, and this is the Hawks just absolutely blitzing them in the fourth quarter. I don't know, man. I'll tell you, Ben Simmons is going to get a lot of blame. Doc Rivers is going to get a lot of blame. Joel Embiid's going to get a lot of blame. Oh, boy. The Philly media and the Philly fans right now are like sitting down at the table like it's Thanksgiving. They haven't eaten in a week. And here comes the turkey, and they're putting on the table, and they got their knives, and they're sharpening them up right now. And they got a strop right next to them going, I got to make sure this thing is not. I'm going to carve this turkey up. That's what's going to happen right now in Philadelphia. This is an all-time playoff choke by the 76ers.
Well, at least it wasn't a 3-1 lead. Oh, too soon. So gets them down 3-2. It's just a monumental failure. You have no other offense except trying to get the ball into Embiid's hand. And we keep wondering, when's that knee an issue? Well, clearly not today, right? You can't use that as an excuse. It's not part of whatever we're calling, insert adjective here, Wednesday in the NBA, although gacking away this lead, I guess, is another atrocity and stain on the game, but just an awful effort. Give Atlanta credit, right? They just went out and played basketball, right? Mm. Fourth quarter, hey, we're down a ton. Let's just see where it goes. And you watch them rally, and Trae Young's done it without the three ball. It's been fantastic at the free throw line, but from the field, 10 of 23. But you're talking about all those secondary, tertiary players. Bogdanovich has had an off night, right? 0 for 4 from 3, 3 of 9 from the field. And you look at what the bench mob has done, and Lou Williams coming up big. Who knew we'd be talking about Lou Williams?
Look at that. We're not talking about wings. We're not talking about anything else. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Right, on a day where COVID protocols are in the news again.
I know.
And Lou Williams is on the court, you know, as the assassin against the Philadelphia 76ers here.
I'll tell you, the final has just gone down. Atlanta wins it, 109 to 106. I had to sneeze.
39 points, 7 assists, 3 steals for Trae Young. Just a massive effort.
And, you know, and clearly, because this is how it goes in sports, like, yeah, what a great game by the Hawks. Oh, my goodness, look what happened to the 76ers. Yeah, that's how it's going to go.
If it bleeds, it leads, my man. Joel Embiid had 37. Curry had 36. The rest of the guys were standing around and watching.
What an all-timer here by the Sixers to lose like this when they had everything cleared for them. And look, you know, when you look at the way the game unfolded, could you see at some point, all right, maybe the Sixers are going to give this thing, you know, they're going to hit the wall a little bit? Yeah, I could see that a little bit. You thought, but once you get to the fourth quarter, I mean, you go to the fourth quarter and you're saying to yourself, okay, well this is a 19 point lead. All right, I mean, you were down by 18 points going to the fourth quarter. Are you going to get a 12 point lead or a 10 point lead? Are you? But 18 point lead, you're not giving that away, and they just gave it away over the entire course of the quarter.
Just remember, after the last game, Doc Rivers was calling everybody soft, passive, and really aggressive in his post-game comments. Can't wait to hear him here. Get the popcorn ready, everybody. Hit that button on your microwave. Let's go!
It was a 14-point lead with 6 minutes left to go. I mean, it was a 10-point lead with 4 minutes left to go. And it was just, we're reeling you in from there. And then suddenly, they couldn't make anything. The Sixers couldn't make anything. Ben Simmons hit 2 free throws with 4.5 minutes left to go to give them a 10-point lead, right? That would be 2 free throws with 4 minutes left to give them a 10-point lead. And that was it until Seth Curry just now made a jumper with no time left, but it didn't matter because the game was already over. They were down 5. They had no points the final 4.5 minutes until an oh-by-the-way basket with 0.1 seconds left to play. This was the choke job by the Sixers tonight in this game. And I'll tell you, man, you know, it's not just going to be Ben Simmons. It'll be Ben Simmons. It'll be Doc Rivers. It'll be Joel Embiid for running out of gas. It'll be everything. And a season that was so great. They finished first in the East. Embiid would have been the MVP if he played, you know, 10 more games. But he missed too many games, and I get that. And they go into the playoffs in their first round. Okay, Sixers, we're rolling. The Nets have injury issues. We're playing a team in the Hawks. How good are they really? You know, the Bucks, are they good? You know, we're able to beat them. And now look where they are. They're a game away from going home. And this is not one of those, hey, we're angry type games that I could see in Game 6 by the Sixers. I can see this where they don't even show up. They don't walk in the door. And the Hawks win this game like 120 to 89. I mean,
that's
what I'm looking at next game.
Think about what this is going to be. Oh, an absolute hornet's nest. Here's the great question for you to follow off of all of this. So according to all reports, there's no contract for Nate McMillan yet. There's a lot of jobs open. You think he wants to move? I mean, look, I saw guys have to update, you know, after the first separation today. Like there was hey, look, only these guys have been had a tenure of pre-2018. And then like 20 minutes later had to take off Scott Brooks. So wait, let me update that because another guy doesn't have a job. It's like, whoa, hey, life comes at you fast, man.
We need to recap why another opening. Oh,
make sure I give that proper credit. Let me find that in my history because I thought it was one of the funniest things ever. It's like, wait, I just saw that tweet and now it's he's gone back and updated it. So good. Here's the list of all of the coaches and that have had jobs long. I mean, it's just showing like we do with the NFL every year. Look how quickly things roll over, right? It was Bobby Marks, actually, that put it out this morning. So it was Popovich, Spoelstra, Carlisle, Kerr, Snyder, Malone, and Brooks were the seven guys that were hired prior to the 2018 season. And then probably 20 minutes later, he had to update it to eliminate Brooks. It was kind of interesting that he was the last guy on the list, and then he gets let go. It's like, all right, the cut line was we only need six guys for this. So move on.
Twitter it out about a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith with Mike Harmon. Now, I mean, the guys who are going to wind up wearing this the most, in all seriousness, are going to be Simmons and Doc Rivers. All right, because Embiid, sure. What did you get from Embiid? Embiid tonight was great. He had 37, but what happened at the end? He got tired. You know what happens at the end of games? Joel Embiid gets tired. All right, and if he had more help over the course of the game, he wouldn't be tired. All right, but you know, in the pantheon of who to blame, it's okay, yes, he missed two free throws, but the guy also was 37, 13, and 5. It's going to be Ben Simmons. And it's going to be Doc Rivers. Because what did I say about Doc Rivers the other night? It's Doc Rivers has too many games like this on his playoff resume. Too many of these games where the final few minutes are chaotic and his team blows a lead and they blow a game they shouldn't have blown. And you go, okay, what's the common denominator here? And that's Doc Rivers. I mean, we've seen it with the Clippers. His entire run with the Clippers was, how do we lose this game? Then he gets mad post game, and he throws the team under the bus because he doesn't want to get the blame for it. But there is too many games that he has just like this. You go through the pantheon of Doc Rivers. You could say, okay, what are the top 10 worst Doc Rivers playoff losses? You would get to you could do like a top 30 list of worst Doc Rivers playoff losses, and people would say, you missed like a whole bunch here, man. 30? You missed this one and this one and this one and this one and you missed this one and this one and you missed that one and you missed that one. Remember when he kept saying, that's our ball, you missed that one, you missed this one. I mean, Doc Rivers, I mean, clearly, Ben Simmons is going to be the player and Doc Rivers is going to be is the coach that's going to wear all of this because this is just an inexcusable thing that we saw tonight for the Sixers to blow this. Amazing.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Sixers were in the process of blowing this game tonight against the Hawks, we told you the guy who was going to get the lion's share of the blame, and it's 100% going to happen. Ben Simmons is likely going to have one more game left in his 76ers career. Tonight, Ben Simmons in a game where the Sixers need him, another game where he refuses to shoot in the fourth quarter. 8 points. He is 4 out of 14 from the free throw line. No confidence from Ben Simmons. And when the Sixers only had Joel Embiid and Seth Curry to shoot, this is how the Hawks reeled the Sixers in. And I told you Ben Simmons was going to get all the hate, and he's getting it. And honestly, yeah, this has got to be it because the Sixers are clearly going to stay and continue to build around Joel Embiid, who probably would have won the MVP this year if he didn't get hurt. I mean, there's still one more game in the series, but quite honestly, I don't think the Sixers get off the plane. And it's a 25-point blowout, and the Hawks are moving on, and it's the Sixers are just, they're done after this game. They blew the last two games. It's been awful for them. But the thing about Ben Simmons is that, you know, he's still the same player he was when he came into the league. And when he came in the league, it was, boy, look at this. He's so big. He's going to play point guard. Point guard. Are you kidding me? And Ben Simmons turned out to be something that we had never seen before. A guy this big is like Magic Johnson. But eventually you have to start making shots. You got to score. You can't be a point guard where you don't shoot at all. You got to be able to make threes. I mean, that's the NBA. You got to be able to be somewhat of a threat. And Simmons just won't do it. He won't shoot from three. He won't do it. He won't work on his game. Won't do that. He won't shoot the ball in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's baffling. But the Sixers, this is the tipping point for them. They've had it. You can no longer go forward saying, okay, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, these are our guys. All right, no matter how this playoffs ends for the 76ers, they have to look at their team and say, what's better going forward? We need Ben Simmons to be on another team. And somebody else will want him because he's 24 years old. The guy is uber talented. And in a different system, Ben Simmons can be great when he doesn't have to hit threes. He doesn't have to be relied upon as a number two player. If he's the third best player on the team, hey, maybe okay then. We've seen that work before. You got guys that can really shoot and take over games, and the point guard is a real distributor. Hey, you get that. But really, you're not banking on Seth Curry every night. He's not Steph Curry. As much as I like to say Seth Curry greater than Steph Curry,
yeah, it's
which
pretty
is
good.
Awesome. But, you know, you need to say, hey, Ben Simmons is a good number three on a team where Lillard is your other guard, or McCollum or Beal or somebody that can really light it up every single night. You know, he fits on a different team. He's getting paid a lot of money, but still, the guy's a star. He's talented again, and he's 24. But the Sixers have tried to make it work now, and clearly Ben Simmons is eroding, and he's not someone who is continuing to explore and get better. He is kind of hit a rut where he's the same kind of player, and you can't count on him. They take him out at the end of games. They know he's not going to shoot the basketball. He can't make free throws. This is where the Sixers have to reconfigure their team, and Ben Simmons, trade Ben, is the number one trending topic on Twitter right now. We told you last hour that's what's going to happen, and that's where it's going to end the end of the season. It's going to be, okay, Doc Rivers is going to say, hey, not my fault. We got to get better guys out here. And it's going to wind up being Ben Simmons. And when the pendulum swings away from you, it never goes back. And for the longest time, it's been Embiid and Simmons in Philadelphia. It's been these two guys. They could be great. Simmons is a star. He's, you know, dating Kardashians, all the other things that go along with it. And now it's where it's Ben Simmons and Embiid. No, it's kind of just Embiid. And Simmons has kind of fallen out of favor, both with fans, with the coaching staff, with the team, and they're going to have to move on from him. I can't see them being good next year saying, we're going to run it back with these guys. They can't. They need some kind of mix. And Simmons, clearly in the playoffs, is showing you that he's not that guy. And there is a thing, Mike, you know, where the optic is even worse when you watch the Sixers blow this game and Ben Simmons won't shoot, yet you see Trae Young, who is just bringing the ball up court, all full of all kinds of confidence, getting his shots off. He's shooting threes. He's getting into the lane. He's driving in and he's dishing. He's playing decoy for a possession where Gallinari takes a big shot. I mean, you watch Trae Young just be an absolute killer, man. And it's hard to look at Ben Simmons and go, yeah, he's our guy. I mean, I get it. That's an optic and they're different players, but you need something more. You need more offense out of your point guard like this, and they're just not going to get it.
Well, the biggest thing we've talked about for years when it comes to Ben Simmons is, what's the motivation to get better, right? It's one thing to be Shaq, to be 7'3", and be so dominant that you say, if I miss some free throws, so be it. I'm giving you 35 and 12, 14, whatever a night, right? With Ben Simmons, defense is great. It's part of the game. But right now it's an offense NBA, right? We've been talking about it all night as we talk about running up and down. It's not a lockdown defender league, except late in games in playoff situations. But you know what? You still got to put the ball in the bucket. And two games in a row, he's given one field goal attempt in the second half. Last game, it was an alley-oop. This game, he missed, about an 8-footer. Otherwise non-existent. You look at Joel Embiid, second half, he was 3 of 9. So he got passive and couldn't score. Harris is supposed to be your third option. He goes 0-for-4 in the second half. You got no other option. Although I got to give Ben Simmons some credit. Up until the 0.1 second remaining when Seth Curry hit that jumper, his free throws in the 4 minute at 4:23 were the last points that the Sixers had scored. Mm. Right, and you talk about Trae Young and everything he was doing and causing chaos, getting to the line, everything else, and tacking on to his game high point total. But for Ben Simmons, I just question what the motivation is. You already got your $177 million. Remember, in the NBA, that's guaranteed. Right? That's not a, all right, we take a salary cap hit and we move on. No, no, no. That's guaranteed money. So if you're going to go to try to trade him, someone else is looking around going, my number three guy is going to make what in the next 3 years? How do we make this work? Or can you renegotiate? Who's renegotiating down? No, nobody. You might be able to stretch it out a year if you're lucky. But otherwise, are you going to give up assets hoping that, I mean, maybe Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks? Because you add another defender? How about that? I just sent him to your Knicks.
We don't need another guy that can't shoot. Okay, stop. All right? We need more offense, not less of it.
I was just going where there was a guy that cared about defense, and that's it. You got that.
We need more guys that can score. We need a guy that's going to take more shots than four in a game like he did. We need more than that, Mike Harmon.
Well, he went 2 for 4 down at the foul line in the final 4 minutes. Come on. That's
more than that.
look, I hate that we have to diminish what he does so well, right? Because when he's aggressive, he distributes well. Problem is, in the second half, he doesn't want to do that. And then he obviously isn't going to shoot, so you just stand around going, all right, we're going to get called for a bunch of illegal defenses because we're slumping into the lane here because we know we can dare him all day as long as we don't give him the first step and a big move towards the hole. He's not shooting. He's just a non-threat, particularly if he catches the ball outside the three-point arc. It's like, have at it. Go and do your thing. So I just question the overall value outside of where you're at now. They already paid him. They made their bed. They're going to have to lie in it.
Right, no, but you're gonna see teams be able to try to make it work, because you can see a team like let's say Golden State decides to, hey, we're gonna bring everybody back, right? We can figure something out with money and you know, hey Andrew Wiggins, congratulations, that's great, you're going somewhere else. Where, hey, maybe Ben Simmons fits there because
so that's too bad.
You have somebody else who is going to, you know, hit shots in the backcourt. You know, you go to some kind of different offense. The positionless NBA can work.
Yeah, but you already have Draymond Green who doesn't want to shoot. You're going to have two guys that are going to stare at the rim.
Yeah, that's okay, because the other three guys are going to take all the shots. It's okay. Listen, just get the ball and give it to us.
By the way, you're also banking that Clay's coming back healthy and getting through the rigors of the season, right?
But there's other teams where, hey, we have enough offense. Our team is configured where you can be our third best player. Because that's the thing with Ben Simmons. He's no longer a two. Like, it's no longer like, okay, who's the one on the team? It's Embiid. Who's the two? It's Ben Simmons. No. Ben Simmons is now a three. Like I say with Porzingis all the time. Why did the Mavericks not win? Because they're counting on Porzingis to be their second best player. No, if Porzingis is your third best player, okay, you got something. That's the thing with Ben Simmons. If Ben Simmons is your third best player, then you have something, because you have a couple of guys that can shoot and be able to put points on the board, and Simmons can kind of do his thing. Now, are you going to turn him into a guy that shoots a lot of threes? No, but at some point you have to realize that, all right, we're going to take advantage of what he's going to bring, and he can fit in with our team a little bit better. He'll be sought after. There'll be ways to move things around. And look, the Sixers will be motivated to move him out, to try to say, okay, let's
well,
get
sure,
it. Well, sure,
because Embiid's
going to
wear him out at some point.
Yeah.
He's a guy that doesn't. Well, he'll end up on a podcast somewhere and blast him. I mean, let's give it. And Doc Rivers has already, you know, blowtorched everybody.
Yeah.
At least once. We'll see what happens in today's postgame.
But that's how it'll end up in the offseason. It could wind up being a three-team trade. It doesn't need to be this is one of those deals when there's a lot of money involved. Generally, you get more than two teams involved. It's generally not. It's here's a three-team trade, and you're getting money freed up, and this star is going here. But there will be people sought after for Ben Simmons. It's just now in Philadelphia, he needs a change of scenery. Because clearly he's not part of the solution. He's not the guy that they thought he was going to be. He's been in the league way too long to continue to be the same player he was when he was drafted.
And yeah, good luck trying to sell anybody else that he's the solution, though, Jason.
But it's
at 33, 35, 37, and $40 million.
Yeah, but in a couple of years, you're making 35. You know, guys like Seth Curry are going to be making $35 million. So it's going to be okay.
Yeah, but he'll actually shoot a shot to maybe give you a chance.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. More NBA coming up in 90. Farewell, Ben Simmons. It's been fun.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It is over in Salt Lake City. The final score is 119-111. The Clippers, my Clippers. Remember, I picked them to go to the NBA Finals. Joining us now on the hotline, LA Times insider, who covers the Clippers and Lakers for the LA Times, friend of the show. We always welcome him in with the most depressing Pearl Jam song there is. It's Dan Wojcicki. Dan, what's happening, buddy?
Guys, are we sure this game is final? I asked this of someone who's very familiar with the Clippers and their history. We're positive. This will not be going to some sort of Arizona-style recount. Like, this is done? Is that what we got?
It's done. It's finished. Okay. Yes, it's absolutely done. Yes.
An all-time great Clippers win tonight. Truly.
This is amazing.
There's not that many. There's also not that many, Dan. I mean, let's be honest. They don't have tons of them.
For sure, right? And look, I mean, this is ultimately like sort of the cruelty and weirdness of being somebody in sort of the Clippers orbit is that like the goalposts are unlike any other in the NBA. Very rarely do you talk about a team that's never made the conference finals before. Like that's some sort of mythical hump. But like up three, like, look, we should say this. Really weird stuff could be on the horizon for the Clippers, just sort of based on their history. Like, this by no means means they are out of the weeds. But I will say, I was just going to fire off this tweet, guys, before you rudely interrupted it, that I down 2-0 to Dallas, there was a lot of chatter among other reporters, among the talking heads of the world, among, quite frankly, scouts and executives about kind of the people that I chit-chat with, about the Clippers' heart and their mental toughness and about how they didn't have either. And I think since that point, they've answered a lot of those questions. They've certainly answered the questions to the point which is, you know, I mean, like, I did a national podcast with a competitor. Sorry, guys. I was cheating. I met him on Ashley Madison. And we and
life's short, and,
right. And as we were talking, you know, like one of the things we prepped was like fake Paul George trade. I think we've moved past that point. I hope discourse wise we've moved past that point. And kind of, you know, this is a tough team. And they've proven it here, I think, you know, in these last two-plus weeks, going to Dallas and winning twice, playing two must-win games, winning a Game 7, falling down 2-0 to Utah in games, quite frankly, that they could have won either of, and then, you know, winning three straight, especially this one, after the Kawhi news, a demoralizer, which, like, I mean, we'll get into that, but it's like, typically you don't hold off on ACL news because it's going to get better. Right, like that's just not normally how that ligament works. So it's sort of, you know, there might be bad news coming on that front, and like they come out and it's, I say this knowing exactly what it means. It's a top three or a top four all time. It's one of their best playoff wins ever. It really is, and good for them for having it. I know that people in their organization who've had a rough day are really proud of them.
Dan, No, go ahead, Jason.
No, go ahead, Mike. You finish. Go ahead.
Well, just from I mean, we just look at Paul George. Let's just go there.
Yep.
Right? A guy that all those whispers, like you were talking, was, all right, they lose to Dallas, they get down here, or they lose to this round. Are they blowing it up, and is Paul George the guy getting moved? Now they're going to build a statue for him outside whatever facility they own.
Yep, not close. Elgin, you were a great player. Sorry, we need that real estate now. I mean, look, right? Like, the limitations are what they are. You know, you wish you saw a little more of this fire on a consistent basis. You wish you saw a little bit more of this dominance on a continual basis. And look, there may be reasons why it doesn't happen, right? Like, I mean, it is structurally strange to have two amazing players who functionally kind of do the same thing, right? Like, that's not exactly how you would dream up a roster, but, like, when they're that good, you figure it out. LeBron and Dwayne Wade figured it out. You know, and look, they're a little different, obviously. And LeBron's a natural playmaker, and that's not necessarily true about Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. But you saw them starting to figure it out a little bit. And then I think, obviously, in this game, you just saw Paul George – and really the Clippers as a whole I mean, just take like an all-time haymaker too from the Jazz to start that game. You know, I was talking to everybody I knew about the Jazz's three-point shooting. You know, sending texts and be like, do you believe this? Like, you know, 10 threes in the first quarter, 17 attempts in like 13 minutes. It's just, it's a math problem that you can't, the team's going to make that many threes. Like, you're not going to, look, if Utah had made 40 threes, it'd been a long night for the Clippers. And obviously the shooting was going to cool down a little bit because it does, but, you know, Utah's been making tough shots all series. Donovan Mitchell has been making tough shots all series. And the Clippers hung in there. And again, I think for a team that had sort of its intestinal fortitude, to borrow a phrase, you know, kind of checked, you know, I guess their fortitude has passed. They've got good intestines.
I've passed some fortitude. I feel better now. Once I passed that fortitude, I was okay with it. It worked out well for me.
You got to break it down into smaller pieces, typically, to get it through there, but the Clippers managed to hang on.
All right, so much like we saw here, Dan, you know, give me percentage here. Like, we watched the game last night and watched Kevin Durant put on an all-time great performance, but
all-time
really
great game.
The Bucks kind of helped give it to them with many things they did. Sure. We watched the Hawks come from behind to beat the Sixers, but boy, the Sixers are really responsible for helping the Hawks come back in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
weird
Paul
half.
George and the Clippers played extremely well, but this was the Jazz at home hitting 13 threes in the first 90 seconds of the game, and still they lost at home. What percentage of this game would you say, hey, the Jazz were responsible for giving this to the Clippers?
I mean, at least a third of it, right? Like, I mean, I think Utah's going to look at this and they're going to see some stuff. I mean, the downside is when you start up that hot, like, you sort of think you're that hot the whole game. And like, they took some pretty bad shots. You know, after Jordan Clarkson got really hot, he took a couple really bad shots. Royce O'Neal, in my opinion, took a few bad shots. Didn't look like he really wanted the ball much. Donovan Mitchell took some pretty bad shots down the stretch. Like, ultimately, like, and look, they're the kind of shots that if you go in, you post the video on Twitter and you talk about how you should make him the new logo and stuff like that. But when you miss him, you know, you don't hear as much about him. And I think Utah is certainly responsible for some of that stuff. I don't think Donovan Mitchell's healthy. I think that's part of this too. And then obviously, you know, Utah is one of their best players not playing in the series either. It's kind of interesting, guys. And I mean, we should talk about the day as a whole because, in the words of can you get the delay button ready for me? I think I can say this. Because I wrote it in the paper. I got a text this morning from a GM, and I had just woken up like 8:15 in the morning, and the GM was just like, "Wild ass day." And like, we hadn't even really gotten into the stuff yet, guys. Like, four other things happened after that. This though, I mean, like a pretty wild, gutty win from a team that you just don't really think of as being that gutsy anymore. Like that was the team 3 years ago that played the Warriors and fought valiantly and lost. You know, this team has been more of like a front runner team. The Lob City teams are always kind of thought of as more as front runner teams. They're the team on the other side of this story. And at least for now, the Clippers sort of flipped that script.
Yeah, it was going to be my next question was league-wide a stranger day when Bobby Marks has to update a tweet talking about coaching longevity because he has to eliminate Scott Brooks after posting it the first time. So all sorts of craziness around the league. So since you covered that, let's go to the LeBron James injury missive.
Yeah.
And I told you, and Jason and I got into it, got a little contentious talking about schedules and how this season is played out. Obviously, post-COVID, it's going to be a little different, right? Shortened off season and everything else. But when we take the largesse, I mean, does he have a point, or is it LeBron just felt like he'd gone quiet for a day or two and needed to be in the news?
Little column A, little column B, guys. I think it's sort of probably how this works, right? It's like, I mean, he couldn't change his jersey number again. Like, that would have been weird. No, I think I'm changing my number to 81, the number of days you gave me off. Look, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in what LeBron said. I think there's some truth in what he said. I also think he and the players at large are complicit, too. They agreed to this as a union, And look, a union doesn't represent everybody. And that, to me, was kind of an interesting thing. It wasn't just, you know, a shot at the league, per se. It was a shot at his representation, too, in terms of the union, you know. A union that's run by somebody that he knows incredibly well and has a long, long relationship with, in Chris Paul. I think that was interesting. Who also, by the way, just eliminated LeBron's team. I think that, look, I mean, the Lakers, it also sort of speaks to sort of the Lakers' just sort of overall attitude towards the year, which was like to go to a deep cut, like sort of like Dante and Clerks, which is like, I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
37?
like, look it up, kids. Which, like, you know, I think, actually don't. That might not hold up. But, but there was a little bit of that, I think, in it. But look, right, like, the league did. Can I give you guys what I think was the league's sort of greedy misstep?
Hit me.
Because I think there was one. They should have just gone head-to-head with the Olympics. Like, that was the misstep, was that, you know, not necessarily so much on the front end, but they did have more time on the back end. Like, they didn't want to give up Christmas. They kind of, you know, which is a marquee day for them. Like, that is a big deal day for them. You know, and I think, like, you could have extended, and you could have done your compressed 72-game schedule, stretched it another 2 weeks, and had, you know, the conference finals up against the Olympics. It wouldn't have been ideal for anybody involved. But guess what? Global pandemics rarely are ideal for people. There's usually consequences. And I think if the NBA did anything wrong, and I've told people at the league this, that this is sort of what I think, is that, you know, they try to get back to normal too quickly. In addition to trying to squeeze us in before the finals in a sort of do right to their TV partners. And I think that was maybe the misstep, right? But I don't think starting the season in February was ever really on the table, like, to be totally honest. I just think, I mean, and it is, by the way, is that fair to half a league that hadn't played for 11 months either? Who knows what that would have done to bodies, too? So I just think the NBA was largely, I might sound like I'm kind of carrying their water here, they were in a pretty bad position on this, and they did what most businesses do, and that's they chose what was the most lucrative and palatable option. They combined those two, and they came up with what they did, and today LeBron James dunked on them. And it did not go unnoticed in league circles, that's for sure.
You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Wojcicki Sports. It's at Dan Wojcicki Sports. Lakers and Clippers Insider covers the NBA for the LA Times. Dan, as always, buddy, appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you
guys
next week.
Guys, this is like a five-segment kind of night. I'm getting out on light work. I appreciate it, all right? I'm going to go sit outside like LeBron, drink some red wine, and think about the goon squad and whatever else we got coming up in front of me.
Nicely done. Back to the Knicks Power Forward podcast he goes, Dan.
Oh, yeah. You have to get back to that podcast. Got to get back to it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.